Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is April 26, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for sharing our station with our friends. And you know what? I actually just found this out. You can find us live on TuneIn Radio every single morning here at, from 8 to 9 a.m. If you don't want to go to the internet and find our podcast, you can actually join us in on TuneIn Radio. So thanks for joining us. We really appreciate you listening to us today. Today we have with us a friend of our show, Heidi Lambert, who has agreed to come back every few weeks with more frequency. Let me put it to you that way. I won't pin her down to every few weeks, but with more frequency to come and share really her knowledge on the nuclear industry, on her activism and the act, and show us ways that we can all engage and turn this ship around. So thanks, Heidi, for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lonnie, and thanks for doing the radio show.
Yeah, well, it's my pleasure, honestly. I'm really grateful that I have the opportunity to get the word out to. I actually think we're in a really critical time. It does matter. Every voice does matter. And I think it. We need to learn how to have a decent dialogue, even with the pro-Trumpers, people that honestly can't look at the big picture and see what he's really doing is dismantling the New Deal. Let's be very clear. They're going after the New Deal at every level. And that's why it's such a shock to us. These were foundations for our country that we thought we had. The EPA, right now, there's a story about the EPA has been gutted. Well, now the Trumpsters, the Trump administration has to figure out what they're going to do because there are some real issues they have to face.
Yeah, and I, you know, I try to spin it to, you know, we'll spin it, that's funny I use that word, because I feel like everything's kind of being spun to whoever fits what reality, but I like to believe that, and I'm not a Trumper, but I do like to believe that dismantling the EPA, that maybe we can create a department that actually works more for the people. I don't know, I know it's probably isn't very popular, but I didn't have much trust in the EPA. I worked with the EPA around Hanford, and they really weren't a force with Hanford. They kind of were just a front. And people said, well, the EPA says it's safe. But I always questioned the information, the facts that the EPA were even given, the stats that they were given. Because if you're given bad stats, then you're not going to have the facts. And I really feel like that's what corporate America has done for the last four decades, is twisted the facts and twisted the vocabulary to make things sound like they're safer or that they're better or they're cheaper and they're approved. And
I think all that comes from the post-World War II era, to be honest. That's when it all, definitely. That's when the secrecy state started, was when they developed the Manhattan Project and kicked everybody off their land and said, this is ours. We're going to contaminate you and we're not going to tell. They literally did not tell the public that the nuclear energy industry created nuclear waste for 20 years.
Yeah, it wasn't until 79. It wasn't until 1979 that they opened the tri-party agreement where they had to release information from the 50s. So it was like 30 years. It was like 20 years of them fighting for the information, but it took 10 years of actual like court cases to release the information. But something else, Lonnie, to remember, in 79, if you started talking about nuclear waste and you were a common American who barely took any science, maybe didn't take any science or math at all in school, you really couldn't understand it.
Right.
You have no concept. It's like you're still like not even washing your hands and still picking your nose and eating it because you don't even understand about germs or molecules or, you know, any of that part of science, you know?
I think that's where lots of Americans are. That's why they just go, hey, we must rely on the government to tell us the truth because we don't comprehend. That's where I was before Fukushima. Like, I really honestly had no idea that we even had an inkling of a problem at all with nuclear.
Right.
Like,
right. And
honestly, I think I was like 57 years old before it hit me that, wow, they really are not. I mean, I knew that we weren't told the truth on corporate advantages, on the war machine, but as simple as protecting our air and our water and everything in it and our entire future.
Right, right. Yeah, no, if you talk to scientists who kind of aren't being bought out and really truly love science for the sake of science, they're going to tell you that we haven't seen the worst yet. Like, the worst is still coming when it comes to nuclear science. And that's just, that's, I guess that's what I had a problem with when we did this March for Science. I felt like it was a march for nukes, honestly, and I didn't really agree with that, and I felt conflicted because as much as nuclear science is part of science and as much as I am a believer of not oppressing or censoring, I think the focus of the direction of where we're going with nuke science is what we need to question because, again, we're so built up on making bombs and power and we're making all of this waste and we don't – what needs to be the focus is the waste storage. And the waste storage isn't something that's an easy fix. It's a really complicated fix.
You know what it is?
Years,
it's not.
You know?
It's not just waste. It's trash. This is trash. This isn't like, oh, they give it these terms, these little coined terms, so that we don't think it's like, oh, it's just a little tiny piece of paper that we haven't put in the trash can yet. It's waste. It's not waste. It's like serious. This is the most toxic pollutant mankind has ever created.
Right, and we're spreading it like crazy. Like now almost every hospital has a nuclear section in their hospital. Yep. It's very common for hospitals to have nuclear hazardous waste from chemo to x-rays, you know? And it's commonplace. Now it's considered health care. We consider nuclear science health care when in fact that's what's making us sick.
Right.
And we're not finding the issues. But I wanted to share with you today, Lonnie, when we were talking about vocabulary and just kind of understanding, I found this really great graph, and it was in the Tri-Cities Herald, and it was talking about they call it the integrity of the double-sided shell, the double-shelled tanks. So when you hear the word integrity, you're thinking, you know, solid, double shell, sounds good. And it shows you on this little graph that only 4%, let me see if it gives us a total amount of double-shelled tanks, 13, sorry, I have to count this up, it's 22. So 4% of these tanks, they say, are leaking. 21% said they could be leaking. So could, that's plausible, that it might not. Then they say 46% are compromised, okay? So we have could be linking that at 21%, 46% compromised. They're telling us only 4% are linking. So at this point, you're kind of feeling like they're not linking.
Wait. Well, wait a minute. How many tanks do they have, though? Do they say that at what they're talking about, the 4%?
they're 28, sorry, 28 double-shelled tanks. There's a total of 177 single-shelled tanks. And of the 177 single-shelled tanks, 67 of them have leaked. 149 of those single-shelled tanks are compromised. They use the word compromised. But this is, again, this is why I'm saying that.
Does that include the leaks? Is that a separate one, the compromised? Are they separate from the ones
that are
leaking?
They put them in two different categories. They have leaking and compromised in the total. And then they do the same for so there's two different kinds of tanks. There's the single-shelled tank, and which is just a metal tank. And those started leaking right away within a decade of using them. So that's why they started doing a double-shelled tank.
Right.
Because a double-shelled tank, the idea is that if it breaches the first shell, it has until this, you know, another shell to hold it in. So when I hear the word could be leaking or compromised, that to me means the atomic waste ate through the first shell and is now eating through the second shell.
And you know, Donna Gilmore's website, SantaNofreSafety.org, has really great information on this. She was actually the one they were going to store all their stuff in San Onofre in single-shell tanks, and lots of it has been. She's fought back, and she's researched it. You know why we had the single-shell tanks and even the doubles? Why we even have the double-shelled, even though we know they're faulty and they're going to leak in 20 years, they start cracking. And the reason is Dave Lockbaum, this is what she says, has been in conversation with her from the Union for Concerned Scientists. He thinks those are safer because the 18-inch thick ones that they store the waste in Europe are very heavy to move. So he's afraid that if they tried to move it, the 18-inch thick ones, that they could drop and create an accident. So it is on his word. That's why we have them.
But that's a beautiful, but his imagery is still very contained and controlled, right, Lonnie?
Right.
Because he's telling you that they're going to pick up this little tank and they're going to move it. Have you ever seen these tanks? They're not moving these tanks. They're buried in the ground. They're like 15 feet across and probably 30 feet into the ground. These tanks aren't little to begin with.
And you can't transfer them. You can't move them if they start leaking. That's the other part.
No, and they're all so really his only argument is maybe that they're too expensive to install. They're probably too expensive to purchase. But once they're in the ground, we're stuck with it. That's another reality people need to understand. When we contaminate and make waste sites, it's going to be there for freaking ever. Forever.
Yeah. And we already have it. Like, we're doing, every single nuclear power plant generates at least 1,000 Chernobyls every year in cesium-137.
Yeah.
Every year.
And then we're like, oh, well, we should argue. Let's spend a lot of time arguing where we're going to move the waste. Give me a break, guys. Like, this is just a diversion. These are all diversions. Nobody is really getting to the meat of the subject. And the first one is, it's not containable. You can't contain this stuff. It's atoms in our atmosphere that are free. You cannot contain it. Second, it's not safe. I don't care. We can argue till the cows come home. It's not safe. It's not. So those two arguments, to me, like, there's just, I don't even understand how to have conversations after this. You know what I mean? Because I agree with science. I agree we need science. But our science is being used for the wrong reasons. We're looking for the wrong solutions right now, rather than really looking at the problems and really looking where there's so much denial and so much like diversion that we're not really looking at what is really happening. And so,
that's their point. That's the point of their actions, is that we don't look. Because the reality is, this is an industry where they're robbing every country, they're robbing the taxpayers. Because it's not a self-sustaining. They have already poisoned the environment to the point of no return. And they continue to do it. And it has taken over the IAEA's plan to dominate the world has been quite effective.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And it's a worldwide ignorance. It's not just the United States. It's an ignorance in India and China.
Well, we have health physicists. I argued on the phone with a health physicist from St. Louis. His entire position was that chemical pollution presents a more immediate clear and present danger to the health of the human species than nuclear will, because nuclear takes a long time. The chemical pollution is immediate.
Yeah, so here's another number I wanted to share. $18 billion to build the vitrification plant at Hanford, which was supposed to take the sludge, pipe it out of the tanks, not move the tanks, but pipe it from the tanks to the vit plant, where the vit plant would then add like different kinds of silica and sands, and it would get hot, and you would end up with a solid glass block that then you could bury in the ground, and supposedly then the atoms would stay contained or be so slow it'd be harder for them to move apart. That project began in 1991 with a complete date of 1999. As of 2000, it was only 35% done.
Wow.
And it had a complete date of 2011. Okay, we're 2017, and I bet we're about 60% done. And how many more billions of dollars?
I recently read an article on that, and I don't have the article in front of my head, but I was reading about this vitrification plan. It's over budget. They've asked for an increase, I think, of an additional $32 billion. It had a B number on it.
Yeah, that's a B. And
the end date was something like, instead of, what was the first date you said, 20-something?
It was supposed to be done 1999.
Right,
was
but
the first
I
think projection.
The
then
new date is 2032 that I read the other day.
Oh, no, here it says 2042.
42, that's right, that's right.
So we just pushed it out another 30 years.
Which is basically them, you know what it is? It's basically them saying they haven't got a freaking clue what they're doing. That's really what this is about. They have no idea. They're just kicking, as Kevin says, they're kicking the can down the road. That's all it is.
Yeah, and getting paid to do it and taking as much money. And what I think is so interesting is that you will see articles about how dangerous it is. You know, how a little leak or there's a little bit of water contamination, that there is a problem. And then they ask for money to fix it. But we're not hearing stories about how they're fixing it. I mean, when you look at the cleanups, the last 10 years, all they've done to quote-unquote clean up the Hanford site was they demolished the buildings, any outbuildings that were on the property. They went and they demolished them because of the animals and the insects were living in the radioactive buildings, and then they were getting out off the area. And so when they demolish those buildings, they just, it just flattens it. They put the dirt right back in the ground. You know, you have this image of cleaning up like it's going to be a park or something afterwards. And that's not the reality.
Yeah, like the Yakima Nation might be able to one day take over their land back. Not so much.
Oh, they boast now that the Yakima Nation can hunt and fish.
Right.
They can hunt and fish. They give them permits to hunt the elk that graze on the, this is actually called the Columbia River Animal Refuge.
Wow.
And that is, in fact, miles of the Hanford nuclear waste site.
Wow.
So they just name it different. They call it something different. And so when, you know, we talk about these alternative facts, we've been living in alternative facts for decades.
Yeah, since the nuclear industry started. In fact, you know what John Goffman and his, I read this article on my YouTube channel. One of the things he said, that since they discovered the rhodogen in the 1900s, in America, they were testing babies. They were if you were born in a hospital, you were being radiated. And they didn't even begin to ask permission from the parents until the 40s.
Wow.
Yeah. So this has been their culture from the get-go.
And it's such gaslighting too, Lonnie, because those poor people say they were born in the 40s. They get into their 40s or 50s and they get cancer.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the hospitals say, well, that's because of the way you ate or what
you
did.
You're smoking. That's right. It's your fault.
It's your fault. And again, the poor family goes into the state of survival and grieving and dealing with the loss. And it just ruins the culture. It's just warfare. It's a warfare on a culture of people, especially economically. Sadly, cancer doesn't care how much money you make, but the poorer you are, the less likely you're going to go and get preventative medicine, less likely you're going to go and get the testing to even find out you have it.
That's right.
So you're gonna, it's gonna take you out, you know, and especially if you don't speak English and you're not even from our country. I mean, there's so many tragedies when it comes to nuclear science, and it's really sad to me that we couldn't use this intelligence to actually make the world better. And sadly, a lot of people think they are. They want it to believe it so badly that they just think that they are, and they're not seeing the true big picture.
Well, they think we've been radicalized. I've had many chats with them. They think that we just don't comprehend how advanced nuclear science has gotten, and that this issue of the waste, that they're just on the verge of discovering what to do with it, how to neutralize it. So we're being nervous over nothing. Don't worry about it, because they are working on it diligently, and the solution is just around the corner. Seriously.
But that's still believing those two facts. The one that it's containable, right? Those scientists believe that it's contained. They don't understand how it's not contained.
Right.
And they also believe that there's a safe level, and they don't understand that there is no safe level. Different bodies react different ways and absorb things different ways, and there's no knowing how people will react.
Well, so, you know, this conversation reminds me of this meme I saw on Facebook by the Anti-Media, which has a show on this station. The Anti-Media has a show on UCY. They post on Facebook, and I follow them, and it says, it was a quote from General Omar Bradley. It says, "Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants."
Yeah.
That's what we're dealing with, is ethical infants.
Yeah, I totally believe that. And so with that note, so this is why we should give a shit, right? Because it's bad, and people are very confused. And so what we can do about it is, one, have conversations and talk to each other about it, and don't get gaslit, and don't be told you're stupid, because that's their first argument, is you're dumb and you don't know what you're talking about. And I have to tell you, I've been told that a lot my whole life growing up next to Hanford, but when I was about 6 years old, my dad brought home a piece of lead, and he had put my name in it. It was like a paperweight. And he was really proud of it. And he was telling me that this had once been nuclear atoms, and through conversions of chemistry had turned to lead. And that he was telling me what an alchemist was, and that my dad felt like he was an alchemist because my dad was a nuclear engineer. He was really proud of himself. And this is in the 70s. Again, super new science. I mean, he really felt like a magician. And I still have that piece of lead. But Lonnie, I tell you, when I look at it, I think to myself, That is what it's about, is that nuclear waste goes through these different phases, and in the end, it ends up lead. And so we either ingest it or breathe it, or somehow we're exposed to that radioactive atom, and that radioactive atom stays in our body, and it converts, and it does all these different things, and at some point, it turns to lead. And that's what I always think of when I think of cancer, is that you have a piece of lead. Your body is turning into lead, and that the medicine tries as hard as they can to get those cells out of your body before they turn to lead. And so that's what I think of when people tell me, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm sure if you talk to a doctor about cancer, an oncologist, they would be like, no, no, no. But I don't know if you've ever seen cancer. It looks like lead. And it's a part of your body that doesn't heal. It doesn't change back. It can't convert back to your cell. And that's what I want everyone who's listening to think about, is that science is just a tool. And the way we use the tool shapes how we think. And if we're told that's not what happens, then we can believe that. But it's through testing and by proving, you know, we can prove if you're exposed to radiation, you're going to get cancer. We can't prove when. We can't really prove how bad. Well, I mean, we can under huge doses or, you know, larger doses, obviously. But little tiny, like one atom at a time, we don't know how that affects people.
Mm-hmm. That's why they say it's cumulative, because it doesn't actually go away. Each little low-level dose, it's not like the theory behind low-level dose would be okay if that's really what it was, a low level. But it's not, it's a bombardment of low-level doses. It's like building a sandstone. It's like building a mountain of sandstone. Each layer counts in terms of affecting the whole process.
Right, and sometimes I think that those atoms look for each other and find each other within your body and accumulate in your body, where in theory they're supposed to just flush out of your body. And people will say, well, it's just not dangerous. It just isn't. It's so low level that it wouldn't, you know, it's not. They'll use different names, different elements like chromium or americonium or, you know, silesius. Oh, I can't think of it right now. Cesium. There we go. But there's all these different, but we're forever, they didn't even have names of those. So they said it didn't even exist until they named it. And I guess that's where I'm at, is there's a lot about the atom and there's a lot about our universe we don't understand. And so for us to say that we know is really arrogant and really why we're in the mess that we're in.
Well, I saw this like little thing that said the other day, it was talking about, it looked like a new element chart, and it said, and it had food attached to all of it. It said, nuclear radiation is actually good for you. And it showed you all of the things, and yet it was so deceptive. You know, it was put out by the nuclear industry. It was a thing that showed the element chart, but with foods. So it identified foods it had, and it was saying that, you know, radiation might save your life one day. This is why we need it. It was like unconscionable what this whole thing was talking about, and this is how they use our ignorance on ourselves. They pacify us with half truth,
right? Yeah, and we believe it because we want to believe it. We want it.
Well,
to be,
Heidi, we're halfway through the show. I want us to get through some. I know that you want to talk about the thing that's coming up in June, right? Like.
Yeah.
And the activism, some of the activism that we can actually do ourselves. So why don't we talk about that?
So the first one is a really big deal to me. It's called Meeting the Fleet, Meet the Fleet. And it happens a lot on all the West Coast towns where they drive the warships that are mostly, that are armed with nuclear weapons. And they drive them into the different ports like Seattle, Portland, and, you know, several in California. And they parade these boats. And the cities actually pay for these boats to come to their ports. And then they use it as this promotion for war. Well, this has not been a very favorite thing for decades, especially in Seattle and Portland. And this year, they're actually working with city councils to divest and to stop supporting financially these parades. And they're called Meet the Fleet, is what they call them, is Meet the Fleet. And I'm sure you'll see press releases in your town for it. But anyways, the one in Portland, June 7th through the 9th, we're asking for our own fleet of kayaktivists to show up. And we're asking people to plan on being in Portland that weekend and plan on going to the river and being in the river. And it's going to be a protest against Meet the Fleet, or at least a demonstration of people who are against the war. Sadly, at this event, Lonnie, you wouldn't believe the shoreline just is packed with people who are pro-military and...
Yeah, they come out to see I remember as a little girl, like, watching our Navy. I lived in California, and that was, like, one of the free things poor people could do, support our troops. That's what we – but this is something that really shocked me, Heidi. I mean, this is – explains, you know, I really am post-ignorant. But when you talked about this the last couple weeks when we were on, I actually went to a map to see – because you said that these fleets comes into, they actually travel a long way into the Columbia, don't they? It's not like, it's a like kind of a winding river before they get to Portland. It's not like boom right there.
No, it's probably, I think it's about 100 miles from the
Astoria
into Portland.
Yeah.
But
what about idea of stopping the fleets before they get to even Portland? Can you do that? Or does that not work?
It's Columbia is a really big river.
Yeah.
Right? Really
obviously.
Wide river.
Obviously.
And so when it comes into Portland, it narrows.
That's why. Okay.
That's one of the main reasons, too. It's just like the ease. It's a lot easier to just throw your kayak in the water and go up, 15, 20 miles, you ride the river down to wherever it is. Because, you know, wherever the police know this is going to, this happens every year. So at this point, like last year, the police just stood at the boat docks and wouldn't let people in. Just wouldn't even let you.
Huh.
And so people have to have different places to put their kayaks in and be prepared to kayak into the place where it is, because they don't want to have anti-war people there, because it makes, you know what I mean? They want it to be all happy and all for it. Then there's no questions. There's no controversy. And I think that's probably the thing that the pro-nukers hate the most is the controversy, because then that means that people are questioning their logic. And so many times I hear people say, like, let them do their job. Just let them do the job. And then when they're done, then we can, you know, critique them. Well, that's what's going on at the vitrification plant. The vitrification plant is one of those projects, a fast-track project. You know, where that means they don't have a solution. They're just going by the seat of their pants, hoping that they come up with a solution sometime soon. And meanwhile, taxpayers are paying $2 million a day for them to sit and try to figure it out. And they probably would have figured it out sooner if they didn't silence all the whistleblowers. I mean, that's the problem with secrecy. You cannot have a fast-track project and have it be top secret at the same time. This is stupid, because you're asking the workers to be involved with the solution, and then you're telling them to shut up at the same time. And that's what I'm seeing in the nuclear site, I mean, especially around Hanford, and I'm sure that that's everywhere else in the world, where they don't have the answer, they don't know how to fix it, they just keep throwing money at it, and then they keep telling everybody just to shut up, because if no one talks about the problem, then no one will know about it.
Not only that, they're currently putting out propaganda, like this thing that I found on the internet. What date was this? This was dated November 8th, 2016. It's a chart of, I found it, and this basically says stuff like, what was it in here? It says that we can have cesium 55 is helpful for us because it helps us build digital clocks. So we need cesium. So it's making us think that cesium is okay. When we hear cesium, it's okay because we need that for our digital clocks, without telling us that cesium 137 and 134 will definitely kill you.
Right.
You know what I mean? I
remember there were studies about our alarm clocks giving people brain cancer and brain tumors because they're sleeping right next to these alarm clocks.
Right. You know, exactly.
Right. Yeah, no, that's where I'm at with the science, you know, is right now the whole idea, I would say not right now, but for decades, the idea behind nuclear waste, the way to clean it up was to reuse it. I know it sounds asinine, but like fluoride, a lot of fluoride is nuclear waste. It's a salt that comes from nuclear waste.
Wow.
And does it kill cavities? Hell yeah, it kills cavities.
Kills everything.
Kills everything. Yeah, and that's why they say don't swallow it.
Yeah.
Don't swallow it. You're supposed to spit it out. You know, there's a hexium, some number, I want to say 31, which is nuclear waste powder that they put in cement, mostly Portland cement. Portland cement's actually really popular for this kind of granule blend that it makes, and it will cause cancer. But it's the thing that's interesting about it is it only causes cancer if you breathe it. That's what they say anyways. So like concrete will encase, it will hold the atoms. It makes it harder for the atoms to get loose. And so they can use this powder and add water, turns it to concrete, and then you're safe. But if you pour the concrete or if you ever break the concrete up, then you're releasing these atomic waste, this radiation.
This is the issue I think that we're talking about. The fact is they are using radioactive waste in lots of products worldwide. It is common. And this is why cancer is now the number one killer of children, because they are using toxic poisons to conduct our lives, period.
Yeah, and have for decades, to the point where people like myself and my kids don't really know anything different, Lonnie. We don't know.
Yeah,
we don't know pre-fission world, you know? This is the world we live in. And I think that that's why a lot of people just don't give a shit. They're just like, well, you know, it's all over. You know, we're all going to just be zombies. And so why fight it? May as well live life large now. And I have to admit, I went through years of that myself. That was how I could deal with my denial. But then I lost family members and I was forced to move. You know, I wasn't forced to move from the Tri-Cities. It's not like I was evacuated. Like, I feel like maybe that needs to happen. But it was a self-evacuation. It was a point in my life where I said, okay, am I going to stay here out of pride and stubbornness, or am I going to just pack my shit up and get out of here?
Yeah.
And that's what I did. But sadly, I moved to the ocean, which was a dream I wanted to fulfill, and Fukushima happened. And now I'm on the front line of Fukushima. So now that's, I guess, where it came to me is there is no escaping this. And people need to freaking understand that we are in this world. We're in this age of fission. It's time for us to start dealing with it before we just implode, you know? At some point, we're not going to have enough room for all this waste.
Well, we already don't have enough room for all this waste. Let's just be clear. We don't have enough room. That's really the issue. This is why we have mass animal deaths right now, because the animals can't take it. This is why we have this ongoing conversation with the so-called climate changers about how nuclear waste really is a player in the climate change issue. It's not excluded from nuclear waste. Think about all the nuclear waste that has been left out of the conversation of upsetting the biological ecology.
Oh, they go as far as to use it as a solution. I've heard people say that, you know, nuclear science is less of a footprint, and it's, you know, green, and it's not carbon like coal. And it's just like, man, you don't understand. To me, that's ignorance. That's not understanding. It's all about these names of what we call stuff. To me, the nuclear waste has like 15 names. It's not just carbon. It has 15 elements that are freaking dangerous and loose and kills people. That is just as bad as carbon. It's a part of carbon, you know?
Well, Heidi, let's think about this. The one city that has been really on the front line of showing us how we have mismanaged our nuclear waste is St. Louis. And even the congressmen and senators of that state in their state house are actually, quote, debating whether they should help the families living within 3 miles. They only are talking about helping people within living 3 miles of an ongoing nuclear burning dump site. There is no
like
conversation about ethics.
100 miles. It should be 100 miles, Lonnie.
At least 15 or 20, at least. Like in Hanford. Hanford, I read that it's a minimum 15 miles. You have to live 15 miles away.
Right.
So why aren't the people of St. Louis excluded from that? Because they secretly buried the waste and they didn't want to tell anyone. And then they built homes around it. And then they're like, oh, well, we don't want to hurt the economy of St. Louis and Missouri. We don't want people to think bad about it. And it happens to be right on the river, so let's don't talk about that. So it's all about let's don't talk about what we've done to harm our planet, not just our country, our planet.
Yeah, and in total disregard to the people. Total disregard for the people. And that's what I grew up with around Hanford, is people were just collateral damage. It was just part of the equation of fixing it. And the less that they claim of being responsible, the less that they have to do anything to the people that they're hurting. I mean, around Hanford, they have the largest cancer center, and you still have to pay for cancer screenings. You would think if you lived there, you would get like 2 free screenings a year.
Right.
But by them giving that to you, then that means they're admitting that they could be responsible. They could be held accountable. So then they're just like, no, never mind. It's not us. It's the McDonald's French fries. It's the cigarettes. It's something else. It's not us.
It might be the McDonald's French fries, since from what you told me, they're radioactive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we can argue that because they're tested and said they're safe. But at the same time, they're grown within that 10-mile range. And, you know, we all know potatoes are full of potassium, and what other atom looks like potassium is cesium, you know, so that potato is going to absorb the cesium and not the potassium. And then they go and test it, and they're like, well, it's not, you know, no gammas came out. It came out not radioactive because cesium doesn't count as radioactive. Do you see how that works? I mean, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
And the same with the tuna and same with everything out of the ocean. They're like,
I mean, we still have sushi bars. Let's get clear. Like, that is so outrageous. We have sushi bars. People literally, and the thinking is this, is that really, does it really matter because there's so much radioactivity anywhere? Should we exclude fish from our diet? It's so beneficial. Should we actually exclude fish from our diet because of the nominal chance of maybe getting cancer in the future?
Lonnie, you know, I have that conflict about all food. I have conflict about milk. I have conflict about beef. I have conflict about grain, fruit, apples. I have a very hard time eating apples because I know they're grown in Eastern Washington. Any produce or any food that I know that comes from Eastern Washington, I will not buy. I don't buy it because I believe that it's as bad as what's in the ocean. You know, it's the same to me.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you on that. But yeah, it really does limit, like, our kids. They can't just have ice cream. You know what I mean? Like, you can't feel good about giving your kids ice cream anymore because of the radioactivity. The milk is actually, this is what got JFK killed, when they realized that the milk actually has concentrated amounts of radioactivity because cows consume so much grass that they take in a higher amount and it exponentially grows inside their bodies. It's right. Incomprehensible. It's this is the thing. We have this scientific community that has given us the truth.
Right.
Our corporatist capitalistic society has decided that we literally are assets on a balance sheet. We are all, every one of us, expendable.
So, but I do want to say that, like, the strontium, like the milk, the milk experiments that happened, where they were proving that, like, children were getting radiated from milk, that happened in Chernobyl. That was like 5 European countries that started seeing that their children were getting sick. So, I mean, we knew this from Chernobyl. I'm sure we had cattle grazing all over Hanford. We knew it too, but we never got in trouble for it. Do you know what I mean? So, like, those whole milk projects where they were proving that cows were eating that, and instead of having calcium, they had strontium. That was a European, like, UN thing. And then people in America learned from those studies, and that's when we did, there was called a Mother's Milk Project in Eastern Washington, where they asked mothers, when your children lose their first teeth, would you please send it to this lab? And it was an independent lab. It wasn't anything government, but it was an independent lab where they tested those teeth, and they were full of strontium. Wow. And that's where they were started saying, okay, women are drinking the milk and then absorbing the strontium instead of calcium and then expelling it through their breast milk, and then the children were getting it at a second time. And that, if you really think about it, like, that is so serious, Lonnie. And still, like, nobody tells people that. Instead, they say, oh, well, you know what? Your breastfeeding is actually bad for your baby, so we're going to make this formula. And let's see if this formula works better, because your breast milk isn't actually as nutritious or as healthy for your baby as this formula is. And that's how science tries to adjust for their mistakes, is they come up with these synthetic solutions rather than looking at the problem. And again, it's so much of it goes back to this nuclear science that happened in World War II. And really, if we were older, we probably would know it came before World War II. I mean, the Germans and France have been working towards nukes since the late 1800s. Madame Curie was like 1880 to 1911, you know, was her lifespan. And
it is really stunning. I mean, this is the thing. Where do we go from now? So here we're going to make our efforts to object, to try to get, to make an effort to get science free from corporate interests, which, You know, it's, I mean, there was hundreds of thousands of people in the street around the world on Saturday. And it marches on, the insanity marches on. There's been no, in fact, the only thing that I've actually seen about this is now that Trump's decided that climate change isn't real, they have to figure out their own solutions because the facts are we're having some serious issues. If it's not climate change, if it's not our, if we're not having a massive problem, then what are you going to do about the collapsing ozone? What are you going to do about the massive fish kills? I mean, the animals are dropping off like flies. So the shift in the conversation is has not still not been about, in fact, at the Climate Science March, I was shocked to see nuclear signs everywhere. Shocked to see that there was pro-vaccine people there. I mean, I'm definitely not a vax. I mean, I gave my kids vaccines, but my children got three vaccines. They didn't get 14 or 17, like they pumped the babies full of them. They didn't, you know, there's no, I mean, I don't know about you, but there is no way I would ever pump my kid with that HPV virus that maybe someday when she becomes older, she might get AIDS. So we're going to give her some poison in her body as an infant that might cause her some severe medical problems. Like, I don't comprehend the risk management assessment in this country anymore. It's like all they have to do is rattle the cage of, oh, you might get sick in the future, and now you have to be our lab rat.
Yeah, it is scary. And then there's all these different information, and you don't know who to believe, and you want to do the right thing. I mean, it is a hard time. It's a hard time to be a person right now and know what the right things are. But I do believe that, you know, if you try to do no harm to others and you really try to think out your processes, whatever profession you are, if you're a scientist, a doctor, a teacher, an accountant, you know, we all are important and we all make the world work. And the way that we do it is to work with one another. And we have to talk to one another and say, hey, you know, this is what I see you doing. And I don't, I want, you know, a good friend of mine actually told me, instead of being confrontational, why not be investigative? And so that is a tactic I've been using a lot when I'm dealing with people who I don't think were like-minded. Rather than me say, no, I don't think so, or I disagree, blah, 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 I really try to be like, well, why do you feel that way? What makes you, why are you convinced that that's the way that it is? You know, what evidence are you using to believe that?
What are you basing your facts on? What are you basing your opinion? What facts are you basing your? And in fact, a lot of people, this is in fact where when you do talk to people about it, like I had a very long conversation, and I'm grateful, to be frank, I don't remember his name. This was about a year ago. I was actively seeking, you may remember this, actively seeking to get people from St. Louis on my radio show. Out of all the people that I spoke with, only Wendy Lumetta regularly comes on our show. He was a health physicist. Somebody gave me his name, and I called him up, and we were talking on the internet, and finally we ended up like just going back and forth on Facebook. And he was quite rude to me. He's like, "Well, you need to learn science before you can talk to me." And so I went at it and was really investigative. And really, what it fundamentally came down to was not that he was refuting the harm that nuclear contamination does. What he was refuting is the length of time. We have so many contaminants. We're being bombarded, not just by the nuclear industry, but the fossil fuel, the chemical. He wasn't even talking about fossil fuel. He was talking about the chemical industry. And in fact, one of his major points was that the chemicals that they used to create fossil fuel and the aftermath of the waste of that creation is far more immediately toxic than actually the nuclear pollution.
Sure, it's more widely used as
Pick your
well.
poison. That was my, I mean, that was kind of my thing. Like, okay, pick your poison because that's, we really don't know how toxic what this capitalistic society has literally been eating us up and spitting us out.
And I think that that's why the No DAPL movement was so strong this last year, is people were like, we are sick of this. We're sick of this. Stop poisoning us. And
We're
even, you
sick.
know,
That's really what they were saying is we're just sick.
we're sick. And you know, when I saw this whole thing when Trump was bombing the Middle East, or started bombing the Middle East, and he says, you know, oh, they did this chemical warfare and they poisoned these people. Well, then there was this huge rebuttal of all the Americans that are being poisoned right now. You know, where's the drinking water for Flint? Why, you know, they're doing aerial sprays over DAPL. You know, it's like, how are we not to believe we're not being poisoned? You know,
yeah.
We're sick. We're a sick nation. We need to worry about our nation right now. We need to worry about our sciences. But the nuclear science is not just our nation. This is an international hold, and they're pumping money into artificial intelligence. They're pumping money into robotics. You know, even my own daughter, here we live on the ocean, so there is a huge underwater robotic competition. And they take these kids, and, you know, my daughter, I said, why are you guys building these robots? What are they for, you know? And she said, well, they're for, like, SeaWorld, Mom, you know? Like, they have those huge tanks at SeaWorld, and they need robots to go in those tanks and fix the tanks when, like, a valve breaks. I said, well, that's really sweet. I love that. You know, she's in seventh grade, and that's a really romantic idea. I said, you don't think that these are used in the ocean to fix nuclear waste spills? I said,
wow.
Why can't a person dive into SeaWorld and fix that valve? Why would you need a robot to do that? I said, I think the robots are used for places where people can't go. And she thought that, you know, I could see she was thinking about that. And then the relevancy isn't important. It's so that she's just thinking about it. But, you know, next Saturday, there's going to be 150 kids from all the schools in Oregon meeting to do a robotics, underwater robotics competition. And it's a really big deal to these kids. And I can't help but to think that that's part of the industry trying to get these kids, you know, it's the kids who are going to come up with these solutions, because it's a whole new way of thinking. And it's a hard way of thinking for a lot of people.
Well, it's their future. They are the ones who are going to come up with it. And frankly, I mean, this is the thing, you know, every generation has to live with what our forefathers have left us, right? And unfortunately, our forefathers have left us a gigantic mess. It's not going to be easy, and we know that.
A 10,000-year-old mess, you know?
Yeah.
This isn't just a freaking pyramid, you know? This is something way bigger than that. So it's very interesting. And then also about the schools, it's really interesting. The schools all got these huge grants where they were given a ton of Chromebooks. And so now the kids are all learning how to use these Google Chromebooks and Google Drive, which I thought was really interesting, because my understanding is that Google is owned by the U.S. government. And so essentially any kid who's using Google Drive is just giving their information to our government. And I would love to know, like, how secure, safe. I mean, I just don't believe it. I think if a kid was to write an essay saying he was going to kill somebody, I bet the police would show up at their house right away.
Oh, you know, no doubt.
You know?
No doubt. That's for sure. It's like, don't have a deviant thought in your mind otherwise. Unless you're a rich person, and then you can do anything that you want.
Well, but it could be used both ways. Is they could say, well, they're looking, and, you know, Big Brother is watching for deviancy, or they're looking for intelligence. That's where I'm at. Like, you know, if all kids are doing their science reports and all of their work on Google, they can word search through that and find out which kids, you know, are working on what.
You know how devious this is? One of my clients is a second grade school teacher in Los Angeles. She's stressing out because now the second graders all have to take their test, their big annual test that they do to assess the school, on a computer.
Right.
All of them. She says the classroom is full of a computer. She has to follow a program. All the kids have to get on the computer daily. She said they spend more than 50% of their time plugged into the computer screens per the school's decision. This nation, this is like statewide. This is in California and Los Angeles. So all the kids are all plugged into the electronics. But part of that is these stories that we hear about that says the more you plug into the electronics, it changes your and more endorphins in your brain. And so you actually feel a sense of depression if you can't touch it. That's why people are always touching their cell phone, because they've done these studies that show that you get a sense of depression if you're not, after a while, if you don't touch your cell phone, you actually have a decrease in your happy hormones.
Right, I make a purpose to like not touch my phone on like at least on Sundays.
Uh-huh.
I like put my phone away and try to defone myself, unplug myself. And then when I was growing up, my parents used to do it with electricity. It was kind of like a Shabbat, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At my house on Sundays, we just would try not to use power, not use the TV, and just kind of decolonize, you know, and just hang out together. We probably could use that. The world could use more of that for sure.
Well, we might end up getting it.
Yeah, we might just end up getting it. I just want to just real quickly plug in the June 7th through 9th Meet the Fleet. I would really want people to put that
Please
on their
do.
Calendar. Okay. And go to nonukesnorthwest.org if you need any more information or want to donate if you don't have a kayak. Or don't even want to go, but you want to support it, feel free to give a donation, because we're buying kayaks with those donations for folks who don't have them. If you have extra kayaks and still can't go, let us know. We'll come get them, or just bring them. There's going to be so many people there. But definitely come and celebrate with us the anti-war effort. It's something to be celebrated and enjoyed. That's all I guess I have to say this hour. Thank you, Lonnie, for having me.
I really appreciate you coming back with us and sharing your plethora of information that you have in your head and your common sense attitude about how it's very important for all of us to actually engage at whatever level that we can, because we are in a period of time where it is up to us. We're going to have to dig it out and root out in our own communities what kind of exposures are being ignored by our own elected officials. I mean, yeah. It's not just St. Louis. I mean, right here in Oregon, Albany is considered a fuse wrap site.
Yeah.
Huh. That's interesting. I had no idea until I happened to look it up. We have an abandoned uranium mine in Oregon that they only look at every 20 years and dump salt on. That's their solution.
Yeah.
So, shocking.
It is shocking. Well, and then just OSU, there is so much nuclear experimenting going on there, just trying to create the SMR and designing the SMR, and it's all underneath the radar of so many people. They don't even know what's happening. And
you know, they say there's no radioactivity coming out of Corvallis, where this is in Oregon. But Matt Holstrunk, who comes on our show and explains the EPA readings on the radioactivity, he lives in Corvallis. He's posted on Facebook several pictures of plants that have mutated near that facility. So we know
The dandelions. He's got some really great mutant dandelions. And he does beautiful graphs. I have to say, I really love his graphs when he does.
Actually, you know what? He's going to be on Friday with us. So, we have 30 seconds left, Heidi. Heidi's going to join us again on the 10th. We've already talked about it, so I really appreciate that. Please do go to No Nukes Northwest. Explore their website. It's actually a fabulous website, if I don't say so myself, since I designed it. Learn about this thing and figure out how you can actively engage. Please do put your courage feet on and take action. It's important for each of us to take action. We'll talk to you tomorrow.